This is Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. One out of every four Coloradans experience a mental health or substance use disorder every year. Today, I speak with Andrew Romanoff. He's the former Speaker of the Colorado House of Representatives. Now he's President and CEO of Mental Health Colorado, a nonprofit which advocates for mental health treatment and care. Thanks so much for being here, Andrew Romanoff. On the website for Mental Health Colorado, there's a place where people can tell their stories. Do you have a story?
I do. I have two stories, one that ended in tragedy and one that ended in recovery. It's a story of two sisters in a way. I had a kid sister. At least I thought of her that way. She was actually my first cousin. Her name is Melissa. She moved to Colorado to work on some of my campaigns. She left a few years ago to take a job with a high-tech firm in San Francisco called Salesforce. It's a job that sent her traveling around the world to London and Paris and Davos. It's a job that paid well, a job that carried insurance, a job that would have covered any mental health need she had, but we didn't know she had it. We didn't know she was suffering from a very deep depression. At least that's what I think it was. I can't ask her that question anymore because 3 years ago, while Melissa and her mom and dad and I were celebrating the new year, she walked into the backyard and shot herself to death with no warning. We're going to spend the rest of our lives as a family trying to figure out how we missed the signs of her mental illness, and we'll never know because she hid them really well. She hid them from me, from her father, who was a physician, from my mother, who was a social worker, from her brother, who's getting a doctorate in psychology, from my sister, who's got a master's in counseling, and from our grandfather, who was trained as a psychiatrist. She was surrounded, in other words, by a family of mental health professionals, but she didn't want any of us to know that she was struggling with a mental illness. And the only clue we've got comes from a note she left us. We found that after we found her. It said, "I love you all very much, and I'm sorry for the pain this will cause you." She said, "There's nothing you could have done, and I'm going to be in a better place." And then she said, "Please tell people it was a car accident." Because even in death, I think she didn't want to be known as somebody who was mentally ill or suicidal or depressed. She was concerned about her reputation. So she came up with a cover story that she asked us to honor, and we couldn't. And I share her story today against her wishes, not because it's so unique, but because it's so common. There's a suicide in America every 12 minutes. And I joined this organization, Mental Health Colorado, 3 months after Melissa died because I wanted to spare other families the anguish we'd suffered. The shorter and happier story has to do with my twin sister, Hillary. She's 7 minutes older than I am. She'll tell you those were the best 7 minutes of her life. And she too, like Melissa, suffered from and still does from depression. It's a genetic condition that runs in our family. But unlike Melissa, my sister Hillary sought help and got it. It wasn't easy. It wasn't overnight. It took a process of trial and error. For her, it's been a mix of counseling and medication. But it seems to be working. Hillary had cut herself off from our family for 5 years. I didn't talk to her, and neither did my mom or dad. But now, after she got the right treatment, which she'll likely need for the rest of her life, she calls me two or three times a day. I tell people the treatment was too effective. And I want more stories to end like hers, in hope and recovery, and fewer stories to end in anguish and despair.
Those stories speak to me about a couple different things. And the first is the stigma that comes along with mental illness. Can you talk about that? What have you seen with Mental Health Colorado, and how are you fighting that?
That's a good question and a big barrier, and one that has been awfully stubborn as we try to eradicate it. We know that among the roughly 500,000 Coloradans who go without the mental health care they need, something like 20 or 30% say that they aren't comfortable discussing what they regard as personal problems, even with a health professional, or they're worried about what would happen if someone found out. And those aren't answers you'd expect to hear with regard to any other medical condition, right? If you had a bump or a lump or some other symptom, chances are you wouldn't regard it as a personal problem. You wouldn't hesitate to discuss it with a health professional. and you wouldn't worry about what might happen if someone found out. Once upon a time in America, that was the case with respect to breast cancer, which carried the same sort of stigma.
Interesting.
And it's still the case in many parts of the country with regard to HIV or AIDS. But mental illness is uniquely stigmatizing, and you're right, that stops people from getting care. We've done a lot of research trying to figure out what is the most effective way to change public opinion on mental illness. How do we get more folks to seek care and support loved ones who need it? Should we run public service announcements or television ads? In our research, at least, we found those approaches don't produce durable changes in attitudes and virtually no changes in behavior, the thing we're trying to shape here. What works more than anything, believe it or not, to change opinion about mental illness is to meet someone who has a mental illness. It's the approach NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, takes by offering presentations. It's the approach we're taking in our story bank by asking Coloradans who have experienced a mental health or substance use disorder or cared for someone who has to share their story. Some of the stories at mentalhealthcolorado.org are happy, like my sister's, because they have good outcomes. Others, not so much. But all these stories are real, and they matter. And I think they help folks understand, first, that mental illness is not a character flaw, and it's not a figment of the imagination. It's a medical condition. And second, that mental illness doesn't have to be a death sentence, that it's treatable.
It also seems to speak to the fact that so many families and so many people have a connection with someone with mental illness if they haven't experienced it themselves.
Absolutely. Like, we estimate somewhere between one out of every four or five Coloradans will experience a mental health or substance use disorder in a given year. That's more than a million people in our state. This is an issue that touches every single family in Colorado, including mine, as I mentioned. Mental illness is not some exotic disease that's confined to a tiny fraction of the population. This is a set of conditions that affect us all.
So let's talk more about the picture for mental health in Colorado. What's the news right now?
It's a mixed story. I'd say we have done a better job as a state, in my view, in creating a crisis response system. It's not perfect. Obviously, there's still some gaps, gaps in part that groups like the Aspen Hope Center, which sponsored a presentation earlier this month, are trying to close. The good news here is that we've got a 24/7 crisis response line, a phone number that many Coloradans still aren't familiar with. I think we need to do a better job publicizing it. But if people call 844-493-8255, 844-493-TALK, they will find at the other end of the line, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, a trained mental health professional or a peer specialist, someone with lived experience in mental health or substance use issues, who is able to respond to a crisis or a condition that a caller may have that they don't want to become a crisis. You can call if you're worried about somebody else. So it's a service the state set up in the wake of the theater shooting in Aurora, along with a network of mobile response units and walk-in centers. Those are improvements. And that call-in line alone gets about 160,000 calls a year. So plainly, some folks are aware of it, just not enough. I think on the flip side, we haven't done a particularly good job around prevention and early intervention. Mm. When I was given a presentation the other day to a group in Aspen, I said, look, if we're serious about addressing mental health, we need to intervene much earlier. In most cases, the symptoms of mental illness appear during adolescence for the first time, and about three quarters of the cases by the age of 24, sometime between 14 and 24. But there's a gap, a delay between the onset of symptoms and the arrival of treatment, and that gap lasts on average for 8 to 10 years.
Wow.
So we need to do a much better job. I'll just give a quick example at training teachers to spot some of these symptoms, not to treat or to diagnose mental illness, but at least to recognize some of those symptoms, engage parents, place more mental health professionals in our schools, really get services to kids when they need it rather than allowing them to fall behind or drop out or allow their mental health conditions to become much worse.
Let's talk more about the picture for our state. What gets you excited when you think about the future or the direction or some initiatives that are happening here?
So I'm glad that a lot of communities in Colorado are not waiting for Washington to help. You know, I was testifying in Eagle County not long ago to the Board of County Commissioners, which was had referred a measure to the ballot, a proposal to increase the marijuana tax and dedicate $1.2 million per year to mental health and substance use services, which happens to be $1.2 million more than Eagle County had been dedicating up till then, because the county had no resources of its own for that purpose. In any event, the chair of the county commissioners asked me, should we wait for the federal government to solve this problem? And I said, Madam Chair, if you're waiting for Washington, this is going to be a very long meeting. So Eagle County didn't wait. The commissioners acted. They built a broad coalition, bipartisan group of community leaders. They asked the voters to impose this tax on the sale and production of recreational, not medicinal, marijuana. And the voters said yes. This measure 1A passed in Eagle County by a margin of nearly 3-1 earlier this month. So the result, I hope, will be better care for some of the 10,000 people in Eagle County who need it. It's not going to solve every problem or serve every person. We're not ready to declare victory on this front, but we hope that Eagle County's success and its approach may inspire other counties to take the same path.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Today, I'm talking with Andrew Romanoff, former Speaker of the Colorado House of Representatives and now President and CEO of Mental Health Colorado. In a former life, you were Colorado Speaker of the House. And I'm just curious, what's at the intersection of politics and what you're doing now?
Well, that's an interesting question. And you're right, it was a former life not that long ago. I'm an elder statesman now. I was termed out, I think, at the tender age of 42. So I carried a number of proposals in the legislature around mental health and substance use treatment because this issue matters to me. In part, I think, because at an even earlier age, I was raised by a social worker, my mom, and a prosecutor, my dad. I tell people it's not a combination I recommend. They got divorced. But it does teach you where you might want to make a difference. My mom worked at a state mental hospital during the 1960s, a wave of deinstitutionalization shut down a lot of those facilities in the hope that community groups would spring up and take care of people who were exiting those mental hospitals. That didn't happen for a lot of folks who were left instead to fend for themselves or live on street corners. Some of them wound up in trouble with the law, which landed them in my dad's courtroom, where he was first a prosecutor and later a judge. And I've wondered ever since how many of the defendants my dad sentenced might have started out as patients in my mom's mental hospital. And more than that, I wondered what kind of a country condemns people with brain disease like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia to a life like that or to an early grave. And can a country like that, a country like ours, call itself civilized? So when I joined the legislature, I asked to be a member of the Health and Human Services Committee in honor of my mom and the Criminal Justice Committee in deference to my dad. And I think if you spent just a week with me on those two committees, you could see how our failure as a state to prevent some problems up front can come back to bite us in the budget on the back end. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep it clean for the public radio.
Thanks. No bleeps here.
Colorado has made a very foolish and colossally expensive decision, like most states, to turn its criminal justice system into a warehouse for people with mental health and substance use disorders, and probably the least therapeutic environment we could pick. Fortunately, the state is moving in a different direction, I think a more therapeutic direction, trying to steer folks out of that system, ending the use of jails for mental health emergencies, for example, in a bill the legislature passed and the governor signed earlier this year. We still need more facilities, not just inpatient, but outpatient and transition services, supportive housing and employment. Colorado, as you may know, ranks near the bottom of the nation when it comes to the number of psychiatric beds per capita. But the intersection, to make a long answer now shorter, between politics and public policy here is that if we're going to get any of these things done around prevention and early intervention, around treatment, or even around public awareness, it's not enough to rely simply on an advocacy organization like ours. Although we can hire a lobbyist and send one across the street to the Capitol to testify, what really matters is to build a community of advocates across the state. In fact, that's exactly what we're doing. We're building a network that we call the Brain Wave. Folks can join the wave if they go to mentalhealthcolorado.org. We're looking for people in every community to stand up and speak out on behalf of mental health care, to make this case to their legislators or county commissioners or school board members, to help us shape public policy and public opinion. And I can tell you just from personal experience, it matters. When you're in public office and you get a call from a constituent who starts by saying, "I live in your district and I vote," it kind of gets your attention as a politician. And so we want more people to remind the elected officials who represent them that they vote and that mental health is on ought to be on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. I think one other thing that I noticed on the website that I thought was interesting when we talk about partners, your 2017 Individual of the Year that Mental Health Colorado honored was Longmont Police Chief Mike Butler. And I'm wondering if you can speak to some of the programs that he's put in place or just law enforcement as one of your partners as well.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging to see so much support and leadership on the part of law enforcement. Here in Pitkin County, we've had conversations with the sheriff, with the police chief in Aspen, with law enforcement folks across the state, because they've said to us, look, please don't make us the front line when it comes to addressing mental health care. We're not equipped to do this. We're often not trained to do this. And we know that if law enforcement arrives on the scene without proper training or the support of mental health professionals, we can make a bad situation worse. So we're trying to move this essentially out of my dad's line of work, the criminal justice system, and make it more of a public health or human service approach. And I think that's what Chief Butler understands in Longmont. We've seen police chiefs and sheriffs across the state step up, support, for example, the legislation I mentioned earlier that ends the use of jails for mental health emergencies. And dedicate more resources instead to therapeutic services. We're just not in a place, I think, where we can declare victory and go home. I'll tell you one very poignant story. I met a young woman during a community conversation we hosted in Colorado Springs not long ago. She stood up in a room full of elected officials and police officers and said through tears, "The only way I can get the care I need, the only way I can be sure to get that care is to wave a gun in the air." Hmm. And she pointed at the police and she said, "These folks will come and take care of me. If I pose a threat to myself or someone else, an imminent threat under the law, then I can be held for 72 hours or at the time, 24 hours in a jail. But once the crisis passes," she says, "I'm on my own." We owe her a better answer. Hmm. We shouldn't have to wait until she's in crisis or let her fall through the cracks when the crisis ends.
One of the things that it looks like your organization is putting into place to try and, I don't know, help communities be a little more proactive is the data dashboard.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. So if you had asked me just a few weeks ago, how do I know how Colorado is doing compared to last year on mental health or substance use services? Or how do I know how Pitkin County is doing compared to Garfield County across a range of indicators? Suicide rates or mental health professionals per capita or substance use disorders. I might have been able to answer your question, but not in one place. You would have had to scour lots of different documents in order to find the answers. We decided we ought to put that in one place so we can track our progress at a state and local level every year. And that's the point of this data dashboard. So if you go to mentalhealthcolorado.org/dashboard, you can click on a county and you can look across a range of indicators to figure out how your community compares to the rest of the state. We're interested, I should say, not just in studying these issues or problems, but also in solving them. So the point of this dashboard in some ways is to create a little friendly competition among these counties so that folks in Larimer will ask, why aren't we doing as well as the folks next door? And if we succeed, we're also going to be developing toolkits for school districts, for early childhood providers. Those are underway for local governments as well. Best practice guides so that when county commissioners or other decision makers, school board members and the like, get the calls we hope our advocates will place to them, urging them to take action, we can offer in turn a set of fairly specific instructions saying, here's what works, here's what the evidence suggests, here's how much these sorts of interventions or services cost, and here's how to pay for them. And we hope the data will reflect that. So when Eagle County makes this investment, as it did earlier this month, we hope over time the data will show improvements in these outcomes. I say over time because I don't want to be too ambitious here. Mm. We do want to make Colorado a national leader. We want every county to take these approaches, but we know that in some cases the statistics can be very stubborn. Making a dent in the suicide rate, the most tragic, and not obviously news, unfortunately, here in Pitkin County. That takes time too. But we also know that early intervention works, prevention works. Kids who get access to mental health care and the benefit of social and emotional learning programs are far more likely to do well in school, far less likely to be suspended or expelled or fall behind or drop out, far more likely to do well in life. So I'm confident that the evidence is on our side, and that's what the data dashboard shows.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. My guest today is Andrew Romanoff, former Speaker of the Colorado House of Representatives and now President and CEO of Mental Health Colorado. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Have you looked at anything in the data dashboard that surprised you?
I was struck, I don't know if this is apparent from the dashboard itself, but one finding really stood out to me in the research I've been doing over the last couple of years, and that's a study that looked at what happens to kids when they are referred to mental health care outside of school. Take a kid, give her a referral, send her to an agency across town, a mental health center, say, and figure out if she actually ends up getting that care. The chances she does are about 1 out of 10. Maybe your folks don't have a car. Maybe there's too much stigma, as we talked about earlier, with a trip to a mental health agency. For whatever reason, even kids who are getting referrals don't end up getting the care they need in many cases. On the flip side, if you can arrange a contract with that mental health agency, in the Western Slope, it's called Mind Springs, for example, and park that mental health professional at school, or even make the mental health professional a counselor, a psychologist, a school nurse with appropriate training, make that mental health professional a school employee, and provide the same service on site at school in the building. Well, now, lo and behold, the chances the same kid gets the care she needs go from about 1 out of 10 to 9 out of 10. So it's a powerful argument for school-based mental health services, and that's one of the priorities we're pursuing in conversations with school boards and superintendents and principals and parents and other and students themselves across the state.
I think one of the challenges to something like that, or one of the counter arguments, is going to be funding.
Yep.
How do you address that?
It's a real challenge. I don't want to sugarcoat it. Look, we took a look at what it would take for Colorado to reach the nationally recommended ratios. How many more nurses and psychologists and counselors and social workers would we need? And the answer, to put some numbers on it, to reach the ratios that would actually get kids the benefit of this individual attention, we'd need roughly twice as many school nurses, twice as many school psychologists, twice as many school counselors, and nine times as many social workers as we have right now. And you're right, that carries a price. But so does ignoring mental illness. So does letting it reach a crisis point. So does paying for it in our emergency rooms or our jails or our prisons or our cemeteries. Those aren't good options either. It's far, far cheaper and smarter and more humane to treat mental illness than to ignore it or to criminalize it. So a lot of schools, I think, recognize that relationship. They're scrambling to attract the resources. We'd like to help. If a number of school districts in Colorado, including ones in Estes Park and Colorado Springs and Ouray just this year, put proposals before the voters that asked for more resources for a number of school functions, including mental health care, and the voters said yes. So that's encouraging to us, because I think the voters get it too.
Mm-hmm. For you, it sounds so much when you talk about this, it sounds like it's an ethical issue, but also a practical issue, that it makes sense to invest.
Yes. Like somebody once said, it's far cheaper to build a child than repair an adult. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, you know, the most comfortable analogy, but the math is awfully compelling here. We spend something like $35,000 a year operating a prison cell in Colorado, more than $100,000 to build a maximum security facility. And I'm not suggesting if you don't treat mental illness, you're going to end up in prison or jail. In fact, most people with mental illness are far more likely to be victims of crime than perpetrators. Mm-hmm. But even if you don't have empathy or compassion or an understanding of the nature of mental illness, even if you're just putting on a green eyeshade and crunching the numbers, you can reach the same conclusion.
Do you have a story that comes to mind of one person who's been impacted by your organization?
Actually, I have a lot. We've talked to tens of thousands of people and tried to get care to lots of folks. We're not a treatment provider, as you know. We're an advocacy organization. But we've talked to a lot of folks over the last couple years. We met a couple in Fort Collins who told us they were hoping to save for retirement and instead spending their life savings on their daughter's treatment instead. I met a woman in Eagle County whose son has been hospitalized 6 times for schizophrenia at a facility 2.5 hours away each way. I met other folks who are struggling to figure out how they can make a difference. I think the story that comes to mind, though, is of a younger woman. She stood up at the same gala that you described earlier where we honored Chief Butler just a couple years ago. She's about 12 years old. Her name's Brianna. She had suffered from bullying and from some mental and emotional abuse, and she participated in a program that we ran, a program called Check Your Head, that helped her sort out some of these issues and figure out where to go to get care. And she spoke at a press conference with the lieutenant governor. She spoke in front of 500 people at a ballroom in a downtown Denver hotel. And she was happy to say that with the help we had tried to provide, she was not free of some of the struggles she had faced, but she was able to resolve them and to get the care she needed to become a confident and successful student and very poised young woman. So my hope is that for every young woman like her, we know that there are thousands more who aren't getting that care. We're not delivering programs directly at this point, but we're hoping to persuade more communities, including schools, to take on these programs because there's such a clear and powerful connection between a child's access to social and emotional learning programs and that child's success. I'll just offer one quick analogy here. Most schools screen their kids every year for hearing loss or vision loss because they know there's a connection between whether a kid can hear or see and whether a kid's going to, you know, do well in school. Very few, if any, schools screen for mental health disorders, maybe because they don't have the resources to treat them if the screening detects a problem. But there's just as clear and strong a connection between a child's emotional or mental health and a child's performance. So we know, in fact, that schools that make these sorts of investments and engage parents along the way are far more likely to have successful outcomes. And that's what we're about.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Kristen.
You've been listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Thanks to my guest today, Andrew Romanoff. He's the former Speaker of the Colorado House of Representatives. Now he's President and CEO of Mental Health Colorado, which advocates for mental health care. The organization's mission is to make Colorado a national leader in this area. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. If you missed today's show or to listen to past episodes, you can go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Cross Currents is a production of Aspen Public Radio.